Alrighty. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Pop Fishbowl. I am your host, Ezekiel McAdams, and with me, as always...
I'm KW Sapphire, Highway Sapphire.
Wonderful. So I'm really excited because I got to watch this movie that I have mixed thoughts about. I was curious, but I knew that I would hate it, and I did hate it. And I was kind of excited because I just wasn't even going to ask you to join me because I just kind of figured, oh, Kelly's not going to want to hear me ranting for like an hour. I can probably just do this solo. And much to my surprise and excitement, you're like, oh, I can do that. I can make that work. So that works better for me, honestly, because I mean, I kind of prefer you being on Pop Fishbowl. So it's one of the reasons I don't really do episodes without you anymore. So.
Well, I love being able to join you. This is so much fun. And yeah. Yes, absolutely. I want to hear your rant. So, like, I know next to nothing about Venom as a character. I know that he's in the Spider-Man universe. I know that he's an alien or something, and he's got sharp teeth and a long tongue, and that's about all I know.
Okay, because I was going to, yeah, I was going to ask, like, what your like level of knowledge for me, and I guess our listeners and for you as well, because I think we've talked a bit about Venom, but I'll just kind of go into like my little backstory. I was first introduced to the character visiting someone from church, and he had a bunch of like trading cards, because that was just a big thing in the 90s. I think more so than now. You had trading cards for everything.
Jurassic Park trading cards and Gargoyles trading cards.
Yeah, of course you do. So I saw this trading card, and just the look of the character, I was like, who is that? Like, he's black and he's got this white spider kind of silhouette, and he's got the sharp teeth, as you had mentioned previously, and it was just really, really cool. And I was like, just who is this? And this kid, Dustin, had said, oh, it's Venom. And I was like, I need to know everything about this character. And I didn't really read comics as a child. Like, I read Ninja Turtles and Ghostbusters, but that was mainly because I loved both of those properties, and I would kind of consume everything I could. But generally, I was not the kind of kid that would go to comic shops. And my love and level of knowledge of Spider-Man basically came from the 90s cartoon and the internet. Basically, I read the comics later, but so I remember being really excited because I would read Disney Adventures every month, and it would have been like 94 or 93. In the little art section, they were like, oh, there's a new Spider-Man cartoon coming out, and Venom is going to be one of the villains, and it's the first time that Venom is going to be seen in any Spider-Man iteration. And I was like really excited, like, oh my god, this is great. And so I actually, that was the main reason I watched the Spider-Man cartoon, was to see Venom. And it sort of turned out to be a really cool thing because I fell in love with the character. I had like a passing familiarity with Spider-Man. Batman was kind of my thing when I was younger because I just thought Batman was so cool because of the Tim Burton movies and everything. But yeah, and so I start watching the 90s cartoon, Venom came on, and I fell in love with the character even more. And this is just, I'm going to embarrass myself with my geekiness, but one of the auditions I did when I would audition for plays, my first monologue that I brought was verbatim, kind of transcribed, was Venom's monologue to Peter Parker in like the Alien Symbiote episode of Spider-Man. I was just, okay. Yeah.
That is awesome. That is so cool.
I wrote it by hand.
Totally, if I were doing something like that, I would totally do Alan Grant's monologue.
Yeah.
That's awesome that you did that. But before you continue.
Yeah.
So you have to explain to me, who is Venom? Explain this character to me. Give me his essence. And okay. Then also, did the cartoon stay true to what you had known as his essence and or improve upon it?
Yes. So for both. So the Venom was introduced first as the symbiote. So the symbiote is the alien organism. That's the other half. It was introduced in kind of a mini-series event for Marvel, one of the first, called the Secret Wars, where basically all the big heroes were marooned on an alien planet by an alien being called the Beyonder to see how they would react. So the heroes and the villains, even Doctor Doom, was sent to this planet. And basically the Beyonders thing was to see how the heroes and the villains could kind of interact with each other and to see if they could either be true to their hero-ness or villain-ness. And Spider-Man's suit was ripped. And so he went to this, not a tailor, but like basically a machine that would fabricate clothes. But he picked the wrong machine, and out came this black ooze that basically augmented all his powers and abilities, and also gave him like a new suit and design. So it was like it was a black suit with a white spider. And he thought that was really cool, and oh my god, he didn't even think of it as an organism, just the fact that, oh, this suit has augmented all my abilities and improved upon them. And so he wore the suit for, I think, half of a year in the comics, until he discovered that it was actually an alien being that was kind of making him more malevolent. And
okay, so he thought it was just technology and like a cool suit.
Yeah.
That was just technology, and then he learned it was an actual living thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this living thing was actually trying to influence his mentality.
Yeah. It was trying to kind of like make him like more not evil, but just kind of like be more aggressive in nature to people. So he would be more aggressive in terms of like his romantic conquest. There was like Mary Jane and Felicia Hardy. And so Peter Parker is more timid, and with the symbiote, he would just be like, I want to date you, like, let's do it. And so, which would kind of counteract with Peter Parker's normal sensibility, and he'd be like, what's going on? And it would also make him more aggressive as Spider-Man, where, like, his tactics to subdue the villains, he would, like, try to hurt them physically.
Might be a little bit more violent.
Yeah, exactly.
Not maybe giving the benefit of the doubt all the time.
Yeah. So once he realized that, he was quite concerned, and he said, I gotta get rid of this thing. And he found out that the symbiote is averse to loud noises. So, sonic vibrations, the roar of a rocket, for example. And it was actually, a church bell that got rid of the symbiote. And so he got rid of it, and he didn't think anything of it. And where Eddie Brock comes into play is that he was trying to get this big, like, expose for the Daily Bugle, because he's an investigative reporter. And he thought that there was an identity of a villain at the time, a serial killer called the Sin Eater. And he thought that the identity was who Peter Parker had told him, and it was not. And he ended up getting fired from the Bugle, and he was disgraced, and he was actually in this church at the same time that Peter was getting rid of the symbiote, like basically asking for forgiveness before he attempted suicide. And
so Peter Parker rids himself of the symbiote and does not pay attention to where it goes or what it does. He's just like, oh, it's off me, okay, bye.
Basically, yeah. Like, I think he was so exhausted and was just like, this thing is... I think he thought he had destroyed it with the loud noise of the church bell.
Oh, he thought it... Okay.
Yeah, so the symbiote disappeared, and what I always found really cool about the character is that Venom was basically created due to the symbiote and Eddie Brock's hatred of Spider-Man. Both Spider-Man and Peter Parker had ruined these two entities. It had, like, destroyed Eddie Brock's career. He hated Spider-Man because Spider-Man was always, like, webbing him when he would get too close to something. And was like, no, you need to stay away from that. And then he got fired, and he blamed Spider-Man. And then the symbiote blamed him for the rejection, right? He thought that he had found this host. And this mutual...
Yeah.
So the symbiote was angry, and so... Due to that, this, like, hatred of these two mutual people, they were like, we're going to come together as one, and we're going to bond. And they chose the name Venom because it was poison to Spider-Man. That's where Venom comes from.
Gotcha.
So, the 90s cartoon was pretty faithful, other than they didn't have suicide in that, because it's a 90s show on Fox Kids.
Right.
And so basically what they did, and I thought they actually did a much better job explaining Eddie Brock, because he showed up in, like, the very first episode. I think Venom came around episode 8, but they brought in Eddie Brock just as a character so that viewers would be familiar with him, so that when he became Venom, it wasn't just out of nowhere. Like, oh,
right.
Which I actually really...
That's a good setup, yeah.
I think so, too, because rather than most shows would have just had him arrive and go, oh, I'm Venom now, and they're like, oh.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I think setting him up beforehand is an excellent idea.
Yeah, so did I. So, and they kind of had his, like, fall from grace, where he bungled all these assignments. There was the Lizard, there was, like, Kingpin, I think there was some Spider Slayers where he got fired from the Bugle. And in the cartoon, he just happened to be nearby when Spider-Man got the black suit. And got a job back at the Bugle because he lied to J. Jonah Jameson about Spider-Man's involvement. Which, Jameson hates Spider-Man, so of course he's like, oh, you have inside knowledge? Then fine, I'll give you your job back. And then instead of the suicide part, he was just at the church just begging for forgiveness. That's how they... So it was actually very faithful, which I learned later. Like, I didn't know that at the time as, like, a 10-year-old, but... Yeah, so that's kind of my thing, and Venom was just a character that I related to, because I could understand Eddie Brock's anger and resentment to being fired. I thought that the cartoon did a really good job developing his character, that I felt for him, and it just, the character of itself I loved, that was born, you know, out of these two dual identities, hating Spider-Man and Peter Parker. Like, both people, both Spider-Man and Peter Parker. And, yeah. And I just, my obsession grew. Like I said, it was the first monologue that I auditioned with. I went as Venom, I think, like, 4 times for Halloween. My mom actually made me, like, a custom shirt, and I remember... going to doors and trick-or-treating and people going, well, who are you supposed to be? Like, are you Black Spider-Man? And I would get really irate and say, no, I'm Venom. Well, who's that? And then I'd have to explain, when really all I wanted was candy. So it'd basically be a 5-minute kind of download session.
That's funny.
Yeah.
My friends and I trick-or-treated quite in as trick-or-treating at the age 19.
Yeah.
And they were like, aren't you a little old? And I'm like, come on. So a friend and I went around as Sub-Zero and, oh gosh, now I'm blanking.
Like the ninja in the yellow suit, like Scorpion?
No, the army chick.
Oh, Sonya Blade.
Oh yeah, thank you, Sonya Blade. Sorry, man, where did that go?
That's okay.
Anyway, so all I wore, I just wore my dad's army BDUs, his fatigues. So, like, but instead of, like, having to explain who we were, I mean, we still did kind of a little bit, but so we would, when people would answer the door, we'd say trick-or-treat, and then we'd go, trick-or-treat, yeah. Mortal Kombat, and we'd both strike out, like, a fighting pose. Huh. And so it's like, who are you? It's like, oh, I'm Sonya Blade and Sub-Zero. So it's like, I mean, we were obnoxious, and we knew sometimes we were going to have to explain who we had one for.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. I would have appreciated that, not only as, like, a trick-or-treater, but someone answering the door, right? So, yeah, it just... And I remember being really annoyed. It was probably, like, 5 or 6 houses where the same thing occurred, and just being like, it's Venom! Like, who? Like, Venom, right? Like...
Like, you're getting the word out there, making them known.
Yeah, but my mom did a really good job with the costume. I want to apologize to her if she's listening to this, because... I remember being very anal about every detail of the costume, and remember, like, chastising my mom. My mom is, like, taking the time out of her day, you know, she works 9 to 5, and then coming home to make her kids' Halloween costume, being me like, no, mom, the spider's supposed to be in the middle of the suit. And she's like, well, what's the big deal? I'm like, no, it has to be exact. So, mom, if you're listening, I'm really sorry. I'm very appreciative that you made the most amazing kick-ass Halloween costume, that even though people had no idea who I was, they appreciated the design. So, thank you for that. And I'm sorry that sometimes I was such an anal kid when it came to details. Yeah, so that's kind of my thing of Venom. I was thinking in preparation of this that the first time I remembered that they were going to make a movie was probably back in like 99. Even,
oh, wow.
Yeah, there was a website that I used to frequent. It was called Dark Horizons that was run by an Australian like web design / movie geek. And they were wanting to make a movie with Venom, and Carnage was going to be the antagonist. And I don't know if you've probably heard of Carnage, I assume.
I have heard of Carnage, but I'm not familiar.
Okay, so the very quick backstory on Carnage is that the symbiote can, like, self-replicate. Basically, kind of like single-sex organisms where they can recreate and reproduce. And so Eddie Brock, at some point in the comics, was incarcerated in the same prison as a serial killer, Cletus Cassidy. They were cellmates. And the symbiote found Brock, and they rebonded as Venom, and they broke out, and they respawned in the middle of the prison break. And what was left over was this baby symbiote, basically, that became Carnage. And so very similar to Venom bonding with Brock, the little symbiote kind of bonded to Cletus Cassidy's psychological imbalance, his kind of lust, for lack of a word, of carnage and mayhem. And because of his psychological tendencies and imbalance, he was able to make his arms into like weapons. He could form like an axe, a mace, stuff like that, a spear, which Venom couldn't do. And he also couldn't web sling because he didn't have Spider-Man's abilities, right? Because the only reason Venom could do that and had the white spider was basically because it had bonded with Spider-Man prior to that. So basically, every individual symbiote is different and has different abilities with whatever host they have. So, but Venom and Carnage are very opposed because, like, even though Venom is like a quote-unquote bad guy, he was more of an anti-hero. He kind of wanted, like, justice, and he thought of himself kind of as an enforcer for the justice that he didn't think was being received. And then Carnage was basically kind of like the Joker, just like utter chaos, and he was already a bad guy before, and now that he had this newfound ability, he was even worse. And so Venom's right. Like, yeah, Venom was like, I need to stop you, like, you should not be in the world. So they're always kind of their chief antagonist, and so it made sense that Carnage was going to be the villain in the movie. And if memory serves, and I don't even have this website to go back to, Spider-Man was going to be in the film to kind of set up, because it's like a yin yang. It's like Moriarty to Sherlock. You kind of need Spider-Man to introduce Venom. And and of course that didn't happen. Then the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie came out in 2002, and then the executives at Sony, who had the license, were like forcing Venom down the director's throat. Sam Raimi actually didn't want to have Venom in Spider-Man 3. He had just wanted to have like Sandman, and I think Harry Osborn is like the new Green Goblin, to kind of finish that arc that he had set for the trilogy. And the executives were like, Venom is like the big thing. You need to have Venom. If you don't have Venom, we're going to replace you as a director, basically. Right? Even though the first two Spider-Man movies, had made like a huge ton of money. And so,
Spider-Man 3 was not good.
It was not good. And Sam Raimi kind of begrudgingly put Venom in the movie. And so this is like his first appearance in like live action. And I'm gonna defend Topher Grace, who I like as an actor. He was not the problem in that movie. A lot of people over the years are like, oh, he was the worst thing. He was such a scrawny kid. Da 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 da. The problem with that movie was just, it was, for lack of a better word, a clusterfuck. It was a mess. It was not his issue. It was the fact that the writing was bad, that it was just a bloated mess where they're trying to cram in three villains, plus the character development for Peter Parker and Mary Jane and Harry Osborn. Like, I think it would be almost an indomitable task for anyone to make a good movie out of that. So,
yeah, agreed.
Yeah, so I'm always defending that, because people are like, oh, he was terrible. And what I think Sam Raimi was trying to do, and I don't know, if I'm wrong, he can contact us on popfishbowl@gmail.com. But I think what he was trying to do is have Eddie Brock in this iteration be kind of like a mirror image to Peter. Like, basically, what would Venom being like if he was raised under different circumstances, I think, which I thought was kind of an interesting take, which I didn't think changed and deviated from the character. It just was, how would Venom be like if, you know, the opposite of Peter Parker was kind of bit by a spider or received these abilities? So, anyways, I don't think Topher Grace was bad. I think it was just a bad movie and he didn't have a lot to work with. So yeah, that was the first. And then, so this movie was announced, and the thing that kind of annoyed me was that, so Marvel and Sony reached this deal about three and a half years ago, where basically the Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2 had made less money than the first three Spider-Man movies. With each movie, it was like less of a return. And because, of course, it's Hollywood, they care only about money. They're like, well, we have a problem. Spider-Man's this huge property and this huge IP, and we're losing money with each film. So maybe, like, reluctantly, we'll go to Marvel and see if we can, like, get Spider-Man in the Marvel universe and make more money. So basically, Marvel would handle the film, but Sony would still distribute it with, like, very little creative control. And so we got Spider-Man in, like, Civil War and Avengers and then Homecoming. But, and you'd think that because of that, Sony would be just happy to be making money on the character in the film. Homecoming did well, right? Yeah, Homecoming did very well. But, see, they wanted their, I'm going to change this phrase and expression, they wanted their pie and their money all at once, and they thought, okay, wait a sec, Homecoming made so much money, why don't we just have our own cinematic universe, because Sony still owns all the rights to all the characters in Spider-Man, including Venom. So thus, the Venom movie was born, and because it wasn't affiliated with Marvel, they couldn't have Spider-Man, because Spider-Man's already in Marvel, right? That's said and done. So, thus, we get the Venom movie that has no relationship to Spider-Man, which I was just like, oh, dear God, like, I can already see this train wreck.
Yeah, I mean, you're already, yeah, okay, so please continue.
Yeah, so, then Tom Hardy was cast, and I love Tom Hardy. I loved him before Mad Max, but after Mad Max, I loved him even more, because I loved what he was able to do with, I think, 20 or 30 lines of dialogue in that whole film. Thought that was very impressive. And I thought, okay, like, I didn't think of Tom Hardy when I thought of, like, you know, kind of dream casting for Eddie Brock and Venom. But I was like, okay, this can work, because I think Tom Hardy is a very good and capable actor. So I was kind of like, I was feeling better. And then it was announced that the villain was going to be portrayed by Riz Ahmed, who was in, like, Rogue One and a couple other movies. Very good actor. I really like him. But he was going to be portraying this very lesser-known symbiote, because there's multiple symbiotes in the comic that are kind of like lower tier than like Venom and Carnage. And I was like, okay, this is a character that didn't even like really have a backstory. I think it was in one issue. Okay, that's an interesting choice, because I would have thought, and one of the reasons I did the little history is I would have thought that Carnage would have been the obvious choice for the villain, and I was kind of surprised. And then kind of more information got out that Kevin...
Well, to be fair, remember in the Christian Bale Batman trilogy, Joker was not in the first.
Yes, so, yes.
To be fair, it's not, you don't always have to bring out the main big bad for the first.
Yes, and that is a very good point. But my kind of chief concern is like, oh no, they're going to try to do a Venom origin movie. I assumed it was an origin movie without Spider-Man. And like I said, you need that kind of yin and yang. You don't necessarily need Spider-Man in the film, but you need to kind of set up the history between the characters. Right? Because without that, it's just like, well, why is he called Venom? Why does he have like the white spider silhouette? You know?
Why does he have a grudge?
Yeah, exactly.
Peter Parker and...
Yeah, but then it was announced that Tom Holland, who is the newest Spider-Man currently, was not going to be in the movie, that it was not set in the MCU, which kind of got me more concerned, because I'm like, okay, well, how are they going to do this? It just sounds like a cash grab. And so I kind of followed, I don't know if you've ever done this with films or things that you're interested in, but I kind of followed the details as much as I could online, like looking at who was cast and what the characters were and the premise that I could kind of obtain from just set photos and stuff. And I kind of got more and more concerned, but I was also, because I love this character and I just want to see him done right, I was curious as well to see the movie. But as I mentioned to you, like, when it came out, I was like, oh, dear God, like, I think I have enough movie points to see it for free, but then I have to go to the theater. I know that I'm probably going to be angry. Is it really good for my mental health to, like, go to this movie theater to see this movie that I'm not going to like? Cut to now where I thank God for people who do torrents and stuff, because I guess the Blu-ray of Venom was released in India prior to North America. I think it comes out in North America in 2 weeks from now. So it was released early, and then people, because they can't help themselves, ripped a copy of it. And then it worked out well for me, because I thought, oh, I can watch this in the comfort of my own home. I will pick a time where my roommates aren't home, because I wanted to be courteous and not yell at the screen in front of people, because I knew that was going to happen. I'm like, oh, I knew it. So luckily today happened to be the day, and I didn't even make it 5 minutes, and I don't know if you could guess what my first nitpick was, but it was just really, it happened to be pronunciation and grammar, which I thought was really funny. So, in the comics and in the 90s cartoon, and it was actually, I did research in preparation for this pod, just to make sure that I was not in the wrong. I can be from time to time. I don't know everything, and I'll happily admit that, to see if the pronunciation of symbiote was symbiote or symbiote, as they referred to it in the movie.
They were technically both correct, as far as I know.
Yes, but usually in the Marvel comics, they would always pronounce it that way. And I kind of thought, okay, if that's the correct way for Marvel. So I had to double check. And apparently, in Amazing Spider-Man issue 3, it's made very clear by Eddie Brock and Venom that it's symbiote, not biote. Like, so.
Well, I mean, and here's the thing. It's like, it depends on when you're talking about names, it matters. Because, for example, the word data or data, both of those are correct.
Yes.
But as an entity, Data had the right to say, no, my name is pronounced Data.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a right to declare how you're just pronounced. So even if both are correct, if the character has an on-record preferred pronunciation for their name or for the reference to them, then that's what you should be used, unless you're just being polite or inconsiderate, or you just don't care what their preference is. But I mean, like, there are people that mispronounce my name all the time. It's like, you know what, how much do I really care?
Yeah. But yeah, again, going to like my anal tendencies at times. Once it was uttered, I think for the fifth time by different characters, symbiote, I started screaming at the TV. No, it's not. It's symbiote. You know, that's, yeah. And then I double-checked to see if I was right. And then I kind of thought to myself, well, that's a very simple thing. You could have had a PA from the film just call Marvel and say, hey, we're working on the Venom movie. Just for clarification, what is your preferred pronunciation of this the entity, the alien organism? So I would have thought that would have been simple. But again, you make a very valid point. I mean, it's like tomato, tomato. So it's probably me just being anal for no other reason. But,
well, but I mean, you're on Venom's side. So I imagine you would probably have the same reaction if you're watching someone continuously mispronounce my name.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you know better. And why the hell are you not getting this right?
Yeah. So that was the first thing. That wasn't even in probably 15 minutes of the film that they were doing that. Then once the symbiote and Eddie Brock bonded, they were kind of almost, and I don't know if you've seen this online, but like Lindsay Ellis, and as well as other contributors from Mary Sue, had said when the film came out that it was a bromance between the symbiote and Eddie Brock. And it's kind of played for laughs. Like, he starts hearing voices once they've integrated, and he, at one point in the film, like, I don't know if you're going to watch this or other people, at this point, you should be aware that it is spoiled. So, Eddie,
definitely
spoiled. Yeah, Eddie Brock climbs in a lobster tank at a restaurant, in this awkward third wheel between his ex-fiancée and her current beau. So he climbs into a lobster tank to cool himself down, and then he starts eating lobsters from the tank incessantly, in full view, and it's played for laughs. Which kind of bothered me because it's almost like a tonal thing. It's like they want it to be.
Wow.
Yeah, they want. Yeah, so throughout the movie, before it becomes clear that he has a symbiote, he's just wandering around the city of San Francisco talking to himself with other characters in the background going, holy shit, this guy's crazy. Like, you know, and it's.
Yeah, I mean, I do remember that being addressed on something that I watched on YouTube. About how, like, the tone of Thor with his friends come, when he's been kicked off of Asgard and cast down to Earth, and his friends come, you know, basically, hey, look, we showed up. It's played very, like, a funny moment in the movie, when it really could have been, like, an inspiring, hey, look, you know, camaraderie moment.
Yeah.
But that it was played for laughs, and I don't like that Marvel does have a tendency, like, not everything has to be played for laughs, and I am not the kind of person, like, I've said it before, I enjoyed The Last Jedi, and I enjoyed the humor in it. I understand why people didn't enjoy the humor in it, but I thought it was funny, so I'm not the kind of person who's, like, always down on all the humor, but, like, I do feel like Marvel has a tendency to take moments that really are, could be very poignant and beautiful and meaningful, and even if they play it that way, they only play it that way for about a second, and then they throw a joke in or something. Like, it's always got to have a punchline. And you know what, Marvel? It doesn't always have to have a punchline.
Yeah, and I felt the same with this. Like, I'm not opposed to humor in the right circumstances. Like, if it was character-based and it fit the character, then I'd be fine with it. But this was purely played for laughs. And, oh, we want, like, the audience to be laughing at how absurd the situation is. And that's kind of...
I mean, especially when you're talking about this kind of, like, a mental health thing. That, like, this is a really tone-deaf, like, something that's not going to age well. Like,
yeah.
You know, when society has a better understanding and, you know, on a large scale of how mental health works and what it really means, this kind of stuff is not going to be funny.
Yeah, so that happens, and that's kind of like it's a theme throughout the film, just kind of this joking, like, oh my god, this is just really funny, and that annoyed me, and at times, like, Eddie Brock in the comics and even the 90s cartoon was a pretty, like, competent journalist who loved his job, who sometimes was so passionate about the job, he didn't really think about others, like his ex-wife or other people kind of in his life, in his circle. But he was always competent at his job. It was just mistakes that he made trying to get that story, trying to get that source. Whereas this one, he's kind of played as like a tabloid reporter for, like, a Fox News or a CNN kind of organization. And that just is not the character. So I was just kind of like, well, I'm kind of confused where they're going. And then again, just kind of like, oh, you're Eddie Brock of the Eddie Brock Report, and, like, you know, his, people kind of, like, snickering, and, you know, and so he gets
he's not taken seriously.
No, and so, like, he gets fired from his job because the villain in this movie is basically an Elon Musk type of, like, kind of like a philanthropist and scientist who's wanting to shoot rockets into space, but of course he's got this ulterior motive because you need villains with the twirling mustache. So what he's really trying to do is collect these alien organisms so that they can bond and, like, live outside of Earth and in the solar system. For what purposes, it's never revealed. He's just like, it's really important for humankind to bond with these organisms so we can leave Earth. For reasons, I guess. It would have been nice for even more exposition on that.
So he thought basically these were going to be living space suits.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. And so Eddie Brock is trying to uncover this.
That's a good idea. That's the start of a good motivation.
Yeah. So Eddie Brock uncovers this, and during his interview, he kind of flips it on this guy, where instead of just asking about the rockets, he starts asking about all these trials that he's heard, where the trials have involved death of numerous people. Like, what a good... It is probably the one moment of the film where it was Eddie Brock to a T. He is that guy who would go for that, the jugular. And in that, and because this person is an Elon Musk type of person with that kind of, like, power and that cred, he gets fired immediately. So that's kind of the downfall of it. So he gets fired, but he just kind of becomes a bum. Like in the comics, he had that hatred of Spider-Man because he blamed Spider-Man for his dismissal and getting canned. And in this one, he just kind of becomes a bum, and he goes to the bar and drinks a lot. And it's really because of another person at the company that contacts him that he even gets the symbiote. It's like happenstance. Because she's like, oh, I was lying to you. There is shit going on in this company. You should come in. She smuggles him in the backseat of her car. He gets in and then basically gets the symbiote on him.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so was the chick, like, setting him up, or did he just fumble it and accidentally get the symbiote?
He fumbled in and, like, got the symbiote. Like,
she didn't play.
No, she was... Yeah, no, she was trying to kind of, like, expose her boss, this Elon Musk type character. And in doing so, left him alone, and he basically bumbled his way in, like, a... There's no other way to say this, like, an Inspector Clouseau kind of way, and got this symbiote on him. And then for 20 minutes, like I said, it's kind of played for laughs that he's losing his mind and diving into lobster tanks, you know?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Unfortunate.
Very, yeah. And so once it's revealed that it is an alien organism that is sentient, the creature just announces on its own that you're a loser, that I'm the best thing that ever happened to you, which is very different from the characterization in the comics, where they were kind of like-minded in their hatred of Spider-Man. They were happy to have each other.
Like kindred spirits.
Yeah. Whereas this one was clearly like, you know, you're inferior to me. I am this evolved species. I'm basically going to use you as a vehicle. And his name was already Venom. Apparently that was the name his parents gave him at birth. Which really annoyed me, because again, like, the whole reason why it's called Venom is because of Spider-Man. But it was just like, oh, we're Venom. We're Venom, and you're just going to do what you say, or we say. And so basically it threatens Eddie Brock into doing things, and kind of played for laughs again, because he's like, at one point in the film, he's surrounded by these mercenary types of the Elon Musk character, and he basically uses his newfound abilities to subdue them, and he's like, I'm so sorry, I don't mean to kill you, I don't mean to kill you, and he kills them. Yeah,
not good.
And so then, like I said, the creature's like, I'm Venom, and you're going to do what we say. And then there's this whole subplot with Brock's ex-fiance in the comics. It was his ex-wife. And she's, like I said, she's dating this new guy who happens to be a doctor. And they put Eddie Brock in an MRI machine. And that's when it's revealed that the symbiote does not like the loud noise. It freaks out. Brock doesn't know what's going on. The doctor says, oh, we'll get you for new tests. And that's when it goes into an action chase where these mercenary types are chasing him throughout San Francisco, and he's basically jumping from motorcycle to cars, not web slinging, but just using like these heightened abilities to overpower these guys. And then it gets removed because he goes back for a second MRI. And then the symbiote goes to his ex-fiance. In the comics, his ex-wife, Anne Wein, does become She-Venom. And this is a separate rant. I don't like it in movies or other media where when a woman becomes something, whether it's She-Hulk or Bride of Frankenstein, it's always Bride of Frankenstein or She-Hulk.
Right, in reference to the men in her life.
Yeah. Rather than just giving them their own name and identity. Like,
right. Yeah, that's obnoxious.
It's so obnoxious. And so in the comics, it's She-Venom. And of course, it's this very tightly fitted symbiote, because it wants people to know, hitting them over the head, look, Venom's got boobs now, it's a girl, it's she Venom, right? So at that point, she becomes she Venom. She gets the symbiote to Brock. They rebond. They're Venom. They're on this quest to expose this Elon Musk character. And at this point, he has now bonded with a symbiote. So he's doing all these trials in the background, trying to kind of find this perfect host. And he's using kind of transients and street people in his doing. And then this symbiote travels from Malaysia. Just randomly, I guess it came through the comet, and then attaches itself to him. So again, kind of like Venom, it's all happenstance. He didn't want it, and then he just, it's like at the end of Iron Man.
And completely unrelated to the experiments he's been doing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's kind of like as much as I love Jeff Bridges and Iron Man, it's kind of like the end of the Iron Man movie, the first one, where like Jeff Bridges just gets the knowledge to build this suit, the Ironmonger, and just becomes really strong and stuff, just for no reason, just because they need that end action piece for the movie, that set piece. And yeah, and so it's the same thing with this. The Elon Musk guy gets this new symbiote called Riot, which, like I said previously, is a very, very minor character in the comics. I think it only had one issue. Him and Venom fight. The funny thing is that this new symbiote Riot wants to use the philanthropist's space shuttle to go into space and get more symbiotes to kind of overtake Earth. But the rockets have loud noises, so I don't know. I couldn't find in my research if Riot was also averse to loud noises, or it was just the Venom symbiote. I'm not exactly sure. But it still was kind of a disconnect, because it's like, oh, okay, symbiotes don't like loud noises, so you're using a rocket to go in space?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I mean, I didn't, wherever Spider-Man was, like, wherever the Beyonder took them, would he take a rocket to get back home, and would that have bothered the symbiote?
Yeah.
As well, was actually my thought.
Yeah. Because in the 90s cartoon, actually, how Spider-Man defeated Venom is tricking him and taking him to a rocket launch. And it was the roar of the rockets that had forced the symbiote off Brock, right?
Gotcha.
Right? And it was just, like, that's one of the things I love about Spider-Man. Peter always uses his brains to do stuff like that. Whereas in this one, it just was like, I'm going to use this rocket for reasons to go into space to get more symbiotes. And then Brock just overpowered him and won. And then the end of the movie is the ex-fiance, who, for very good reasons, because she got lied to by Brock, and I think in any relationship, trust is important, communication is important. It's just like, oh, you're so hot that now you have this superhuman ability, let's get back together, I'm gonna dump this guy that was with previously for 6 months, because, you know, happy ending. And she's like, it was really hot when I made out with you when I was She-Venom. That's how the movie ends.
Gross.
Very gross. So then it ends. And then they've got the end credit scenes, because, of course, Sony's got to do the Marvel thing. Marvel's been known since the beginning of their universe with Iron Man for their end credit scenes. So Eddie Brock goes to this prison to interview a serial killer that, of course, is Cletus Cassidy, who will become Carnage. And it's Woody Harrelson, who I love. I love Woody Harrelson, in a red wig, because Cletus Cassidy is ginger. He's redheaded. But Woody Harrelson is, like, in his early 50s, I want to say, and he is bald, and everyone knows that he's bald. And so having him in a red wig, he sort of looked like a clown. It looked ridiculous. And it ends the film, because, of course, they've got to plant that little Easter egg where he's like, oh, when I get out of here, and I will, there's going to be carnage. Dun, dun, dun. And I'm just like, oh, really?
I don't know. See, I mean, there are such things as really good wigs, so I feel like you still shouldn't really be able to tell.
Yeah.
I can suspend my disbelief for actors and costumes.
Yeah.
So, but, like, if it's not done well, it's like, come on, with that kind of budget, should be done.
Oh yeah, no, it looked really laughable because, like, and again, maybe for people who don't know who Woody Harrelson is, they wouldn't have known. But I know Woody Harrelson, and even when he had a wig, like in The Hunger Games, it was well done enough that, like, I don't think I would have known had I had no prior reference to Woody Harrelson's career. Right?
I think in The Hunger Games it was fantastic. Like, I could not tell that that was a wig, and like I was looking hard. And, like,
yeah.
They did a really good job, and like I didn't. The thing is, I wasn't looking hard in the first time I saw the movie because I was enjoying the movie. I was completely immersed in it. It wasn't until like the 10th viewing that I'm like, all right, I'm gonna see if I can find this.
Yeah.
And see the lines or anything. It's like they did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And I feel like with the budget that I know that the Venom movie got, it's kind of how I feel about Fantastic Beasts and The Crimes of Grindelwald, actually, is like, with that kind of budget, why was I noticing weird things? Like, this should be just polished to perfection.
Yeah. So, it wasn't really promising. The movie ended, to no surprise, with me yelling at this. I should have probably, like, had a counter, almost like people have drinking games. I should have timed how many times I yelled at the screen. But it was probably, I want to say, 25 times, maybe 27.
Yeah. That
was just, like, really? And the more I thought about it, like, you don't necessarily need Spider-Man in a Venom movie, but if they had even just set it up where they had showed it on screen, and I know why they didn't, because they didn't have the license to do it, but if they even had just had Spider-Man on, like, a television screen at the very beginning of the movie, oh, Spider-Man recently fought this new creature called Venom, and Brock has already got the symbiote, and he's just in a different part of the country doing his own thing, I think it would have been better than how they eventually ended up doing it, whereas trying to do an origin, like I said, without the primary basis for that character.
Yeah, I mean, I feel you, because they've done that with a lot of characters that I like too, where it's like, yeah, their backstory is too complicated, we're just going to change and simplify, and like, you really could have done justice to the character, I think, if you wanted to.
Yeah. And I was thinking, it kind of, like, reminds me of Ghostbusters, because there were parts of the movie I really liked. Like, this is kind of the ironic part, is that the character I thought they did the most justice to was his ex-fiancée, Anne Wein, who's, like I said, his ex-wife in the comics. I thought her characterization was spot on. She was only in, I think, like, 10 issues of it. And basically, just to kind of give a little backstory to Eddie Brock's character, but from the issues that I read, her personality was spot on. And Michelle Williams, who I like, did a really good job as her. So that I found really funny. Like, Eddie Brock was all over the place. It was a mishmash of characters. But they got the ex-wife, like, down to a T.
That's funny.
Yeah. But other than that, it hurt, because I want a really good movie. It's probably how you feel with Dr. Doom and the Fantastic Four. You want a good movie that shows the greatness of this character, the potential of what you know it can be.
Yeah, because it's like, I know why this character's cool, and yet when most people, like, if you don't know Doom, like the real Doom, and if your only exposure to Dr. Doom is through the horrible actual movies, which all of them are bad, the Fantastic Four movies, it's like, you would question why I have Dr. Doom tattooed on my back.
Yeah.
Like, any sane person, if that's all you know of Dr. Doom, any sane person would be like, why do you have that guy as a tattoo? But, like, he's so freaking cool. That's why I have him as a tattoo.
Yeah.
Really, like, oh, it would be so good to get, like, because here's a good example. Like, the Dungeons & Dragons movies are very embarrassing. And, like, if that's your only exposure to what Dungeons & Dragons is like, it's like, that's not why I played this game. War of the Rings is much more like what people have in their head when they're playing Dungeons and Dragons. Like, that's the world that we're playing in.
Yeah.
So it's a much better representation of, like, this is how we see this world. And so I would love to have a faithful adaptation of Doctor Doom. And, you know, if by extension a faithful adaptation of the Fantastic Four, that would be fine too. But really, I want a really great Doctor Doom movie.
Yeah.
But we know we're never going to get it. They're never going to do it.
Yeah. And it's like I said, There are parts of Venom that I really enjoyed. The ex-wife, I loved some of the stuff that Tom Hardy did, but like, the reason I brought up Ghostbusters was that, like, that last movie was, and, you know, you and I had talked about this a bit, and I know you didn't like it either, was that it felt more like a Saturday Night Live parody and skit and homage rather than just a movie on its own. And that's kind of how Venom felt. Like, if they removed the Venom name and Eddie Brock, it could have just been a movie about a guy who gets an alien organism attached to him and kind of this love, kind of bromance story between them. And it probably would have been not a better movie, but better than attaching the name just because of the IP.
Well, I mean, I've heard that for a couple of movies too, like the Sherlock Holmes movie, that it would have been better as somebody, because it was more action-oriented than you would normally expect from who would be Sherlock Holmes. But, like, you have to kind of have more action-oriented stuff these days, so, like, it would have done better if it was just like, oh, a super detective. But then you also can't do a movie about a super detective without it being compared to Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
So you're kind of in a no-win situation there.
So that's my Venom rant. But I think that that kind of brings us to an end, unless you have anything else that you want to add. Yeah, I was just going to say to all of our people, if you can find any books that are preferably written by female authors for Kelly, please shoot us an email at popfishbowl@gmail.com, or you can contact Kelly on other her social media platforms. Kelly, where can everyone find you?
I can be found online at my website at colloden.com, C-O-L-O-D-E-N, or on Twitter or DeviantArt as KW Sapphire, or on YouTube as Kaya White Sapphire.
Wonderful. And I can be found on Twitter mostly. I'm trying to get more on Twitter. I kind of took a hiatus, which was much needed, but at PocketfulOfish, O instead of just of. And my website, culturegecko.com, as well as the other places that I write for when I can. And you can mostly find that on my website or either Twitter. I usually post the links. And as always, it was lovely chatting with you. And thank you so much for just, like, letting me rant about Venom for 40 minutes.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it. Thank you for letting me join you.
Awesome. Okay, we'll see you guys when we see ya.